You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, I grew up in a household that was a two-career family long before that became the norm for living in the suburbs and for living anywhere in the Los Angeles area. My father worked for the city of Los Angeles. My mother was a full-time realtor, and she specialized in residential property. And from an early age on, my sister and I knew all about open houses and listings and offers and counter offers and FHA financing and Calvet mortgages and commissions and what they all meant by the time we were 8 or 9 years old. That's what it's like growing up in the house of a realtor. There were always some signs, for sale signs, that were sitting in the garage. The weekly multiple listing books were in a stack by the fireplace, and the telephone was constantly ringing. Even though my mom had an office, our home was frequently an extension of that office. It would be no surprise then that we were taught at an early age to understand that real estate was one of the best investments, at least in California. And with that came the focus on home ownership and understanding certain principles, namely that it had to be the right price or you walked away. And the other principle was location, location, location. Our text this morning is about a very ancient real estate transaction, but it was one which would hardly meet the criterion for a good investment. It was, as our own John Holbert, who we heard preach 2 weeks ago, wrote about, and he said it was one of the worst deals ever. One of the worst deals ever. Or was it? As we have looked at Jeremiah's ministry over these last few weeks, it is clear that he fit into that prophetic tradition of ancient Judah. He came by it honestly. You recall, he was the son of a priest. And he was steeped in his faith and in his people's history. And the two of them were just interwoven. You could not separate history and faith from one another. He knew the history of the dynastic monarchies of Israel and Judah, which largely were failures. He received a call from God to which he responded most reluctantly. Then he went on to be that voice which spoke messages of great challenge and largely of doom and gloom for the kingdom because of, as it was stated, the people's unfaithfulness in living out God's commandment and in caring for the least and the lost. Well, this morning in these texts, we see another side of the prophet, the one who strangely offers a glimmer of hope to the people. Now, in all fairness, this is not something that is unique to Jeremiah. Other prophets offered hope for a different kind of future. Isaiah, for example, offered many a word of hope, which we often look at during the Advent and Christmas season. In Jeremiah's case, we are not only dealing with words about a better future, he is also demonstrating his belief in that future by his actions. Actions that, on the one hand, made him look like an utter fool, but on the other hand, showed that he, Jeremiah, held the deep conviction that God was not yet done with the people of Judah, that there was more to come to this story. All the signs were in place that there was nothing but trouble awaiting the kingdom of Judah. The tiny nation was caught in between the power struggles of three empires, which eventually became two, as you remember, Egypt and Babylon. Autonomy for those of Judah was fleeting. They were really a puppet state, which was allowed to exist depending on the whims of Pharaoh or the king of Babylon. They were not capable of overcoming either of these ancient superpowers. And it was not a pretty picture when it came to self-determination for the kingdom of Judah. Jeremiah, in no uncertain terms, gave voice to this reality, and he painted a picture for them of a grim future, especially if they chose the wrong side. He became that constant annoying presence to the monarch and to the courts of the monarchy. So you really have to wonder, when you think about these prophets and their relationships, why they were even allowed to continue, why someone just didn't put a stop to it all and get rid of them and say, go away. But it seems that this prophetic tradition ran deep for the ancient Jews. And there did not seem to really be a question about the necessity of the role of the prophet. They were something. Their message was something that had to be considered. The necessary evil, the nagging conscience, which you wish would leave you alone so that you could go and pursue the things that you really wanted to do. Yes, from all indicators, Jeremiah was very well suited to this task, lived into it well, and executed the role as was required. Now, our text this morning was another instance of Jeremiah receiving this word from God. And this was wildly different from any previous vision or word that Jeremiah had received. He was told that his cousin was going to come to him with a real estate deal, apparently a deal he could not refuse. And sure enough, his cousin Hanamel came to Jeremiah and he told him that he needed to purchase this field in Anatoth. Now, Anatoth, you might remember, was Jeremiah's hometown. And on one level, this seemed like a very straightforward transaction. A straightforward transaction, that is, if you discounted the fact that the kingdom was falling apart, that the elite of Judah would be sent into exile, and that the city of Jerusalem was going to be laid to waste. Some real estate deal. Well, throwing conventional wisdom out the door, Jeremiah gave over the 17 shekels to purchase the land and follow through on what God told him would happen. Now, at face value, this transaction gave us great insight of what typically happened in a real estate deal of that time. A deed was signed, money was weighed out, and title was granted. But what was more important is that Jeremiah was instructed to place this deal, this deed, into an earthen jar where it would be held. It was kind of the ancient equivalent of a modern-day safe. And this was because of a promise, a hopeful, hope-filled promise from God that houses and fields and vineyards would once again be bought and exchanged in this land. Now let's remember, this is the same God who told Jeremiah that God was going to lift up Babylon to crush Judah. And now we have this word of hope being offered to this ancient kingdom. So what about this flip-flopping that seems to be going on with God? Was God a chameleon? Well, no, and as we've considered before, this is another example of what happens when people are trying to make God in their own image or out of their own personal need. The people could not bring themselves to believe that it was their bad choices they made at a nation that had led and was leading to their demise. It was much easier to say that they were victims, victims of God's whims. And like we considered last week, that is just plain old bad theology. And it is not the God of whom Jesus speaks and teaches. The important part of this episode for us is that God was not done with the people of Judah. There was a glimpse of a hopeful future when things would be restored. Jeremiah's message to the people was in startling contrast to all of his other words of condemnation. Now the message was, no matter how difficult and how demoralized things had become for Judah, it was not going to be the end of their story. Buying a vineyard. At least I want to think Jeremiah preferred buying a vineyard. What do you think? Buying a vineyard over a plain old field, well, this was the ultimate act of hope. People probably thought he had lost his mind or was a fool to have done something so silly. But Jeremiah felt compelled to buy that field, even though he would probably never till the soil. It was an amazing, amazing statement of hope. Hope that the future will always bring, in that case for the people of Judah, possibilities. Friends, where do you find yourselves now? Are you hope-filled? Are you hopeless? Are you something in between? What are the things you encounter which are life-draining and life-giving? We live in the contrasts, we know that. We live in the in-between places. That is the reality of our human condition. The charmed life where everything goes without a hitch, where we always grow, that's the stuff of which fantasies are made. Fantasies that are not helpful. Fantasies that operate in a stark contrast to what really can be the grittiness of life. Let's be real. We have, all of us at times, felt like we were Judah under the siege of Nebuchadnezzar's armies. Maybe we feel under siege in our work. Maybe it's in our relationships. Maybe that feeling of being under siege is our self-doubt. Maybe it's because of the wounds of which we can never fully let go. And does it mean we give up? Generally, no. Some do. But there is always for us a message of hope, a message like the message of Jeremiah. You see, his actions, on the other hand, in the face of adversity, are ones which say, no, we are not going to give up. We do not give up because God has not given up on us. And if God has not given up on us, why would we give up on ourselves? Jeremiah buying that field was silly, but it was his belief in a hopeful future. Fiona Stafford is a professor of English literature at Oxford. And I read a story that she wrote about something that probably largely went unnoticed, except for the small group of students who gathered one day to plant a tree in Islington, North London. And it was a slim but healthy horse chestnut sapling that they planted in the ground. And it might have looked like just another tree. But this was not just another tree. There was a special guest that was present at that tree planting. And the guest was Dr. Eva Schloss, an Auschwitz survivor. Well, it turned out that Eva Schloss knew Anne Frank before World War II. She survived. Anne did not. Anne's father, Otto, was the only one of the Frank family to survive. And eventually, he married Eva Schloss's mother. So why was Dr. Schloss present at this tree planting? Well, the sapling was from the horse chestnut tree that stood for years in Amsterdam next to where Anne and her family were hidden away. The same tree that Anne referred to in her diaries. And in the time she was hidden away, it was the one thing that she could see from her window. And she wrote and reflected, "From my favorite spot on the floor, I look up at the blue sky and the bare chestnut tree, on whose branches little raindrops glisten like silver, and at the seagulls and other birds as they glide on the wind." Well, the original tree succumbed to disease and was toppled by a storm in 2010. But saplings have survived. And in essence, they have kept the tree and the hope that it represented alive. And it was a sapling of that tree that was planted in Islington that day. Jeremiah had a vision for a time when Judah would no longer be under siege, a time when it would again be that veritable land of milk and honey that God's chosen people had sought so many generations before. So he bought a piece of land. He bought a piece of land, what many considered to be a crazy act. but instead it was an amazing symbol for how God was not done with Judah, that there was hope and the story would not be over. And friends, it is the same today. God is never finished with us. God never gives up on us. There is always, always the possibility for redemption, for forgiveness, for transformation. For God's people, for followers of Jesus, there is always, always hope. That was Jeremiah's ancient message. That is our message for today. So, friends, what is the hope that you need right now? Better yet, what is that metaphorical field that you might buy, or that tree that you might plant, which will point toward a better time and point toward a path, the path of hope, where God accompanies us each step of the way? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.